asked. "Carnal, help me!"
"Flaco, stop it."
Little Angel rushed into the bedroom behind them. "Angel," he said, "you okay?"
"Don't come in here, tío," said Minnie, kicking the bathroom door closed.
Big Angel sat in the water, hands over his face. His back looked like a Halloween costume of gray bones. He shivered in the warm water.
"You wanted a party," Minnie said. "Do you want to look good or not?"
"Good," he said softly. Perla leaned in with a huge, soft sponge foaming with soap and reached between his legs.
"Better, Flaco, see? Feels good, no?"
"Don't watch," he told his daughter.
"Ain't watching. I'm busy with your armpits."
He lay back in the water and kept his eyes screwed shut.
"Nice and clean," Perla said. "Como un buen muchachito."
Big Angel covered his sagging breasts with his blackened hands.
"Mija," he said,
"Daddy,
do you forgive me?"
"For what?"
He waved his hand in the air.
"I'm sorry."
"For what, Daddy?"
"All these things." He opened his eyes and stared at her. "I used to wash you," he said, "when you were my baby." She busied herself with the bottle of No Tears baby shampoo.
"I used to be your father. Now I am your baby."
He sobbed, only once. She blinked fast and put shampoo in her palm.
"It's okay," she said. "Everything's okay."
He closed his eyes and let her wash his hair.
La Pachanga.
Sending for Perla to come to me. I didn't care if she had two sons. Sending for my Perla. I didn't care if she was raising two sisters. And she came to me. Finally.
11 a.m. Little Angel checked his watch. It was time to return to the store and get the birthday cakes. He was flummoxed when La Gloriosa tossed aside her dish towel and walked out with him, looping her arm through his. He made a small sound like, huh? He could feel her muscle. He tried to clench his arm so she would feel his. He smelled her hair, felt her heat. He was back in high school.
"Ay, qué carro," she enthused when she saw the massive Ford. She ran her hand along its long side. The Crown Vic was clearly a big winner. He opened the passenger door for her.
"And a gentleman," she said.
"I try," he said lamely, tried to not look down her blouse as she lowered herself into her seat. But she saw him looking. He made believe he was staring past her cleavage at the radio, as if remembering something interesting from his recent past.
"Did you buy this carrote?" she asked.
Apparently, Mexicans really appreciated big vehicles with atrocious gas mileage. "Just renting." He closed her door and trotted around to his own side.
"Buy one," she said as she got in. "For me."
"For you, anything."
"Eres rico, no?" she said.
"Sure."
"Okay, baby," she said. "Buy two."
He guffawed falsely and way too loud. He was excruciatingly aware of his every movement as she gazed at him.
"Don't drop the keys. Don't flood the engine. Don't crash into anything. Don't slam on the brakes. Don't fart."
"I'm not, you know, rich," he suddenly chuckled. "Can't just buy a fleet of cars."
"Idiot, shut up," he told himself. "Asshat."
"I only need one then," she said.
"This one."
"Okay." He managed to get the engine started and the shifter into D, and he pulled out as slowly as a cruise ship leaving port. He motored out of the little neighborhood and made the right turn that would take him to the main street. He came to a full halt at the stop sign and waited patiently until una Chevy Pica full of lawn mowing equipment passed. He eased on out, the Crown Vic soft as a cloud as it drifted around the corner.
"Do I make you nervous, Gabriel?" she asked.
"No.
You drive me slow."
"Okay. Yes."
"For why?"
"You're La Gloriosa." She made a pfft sound with her mouth. You make everybody feel nervous, he said.
No, don't think so.
If they don't feel that way, proclaimed the king of romance, they must be dead.
Angel Gabriel, I could be your mother.
Come on, you're only 11 years older than me.
This family, I could be your mama.
I don't have mommy issues, I assure you. Suddenly, further gallantry went off in him like a firecracker. I have you issues. That was rather piquant, he thought, with deep satisfaction. She turned a little in her seat, put her knee up on the leather.
¿Y eso? She said. ¿Qué quiere decir?
A fair question. What did he mean? He wasn't sure. He rolled on down the main drag as if she hadn't said anything. He somehow managed to drive right past the target turnoff and on into the dry hills beyond, which were covered in tumbleweeds and manzanita and clearly awaiting one thrown cigarette to explode in a conflagration. By the time he realized he was nowhere near target, he was lost in a housing tract apparently formed entirely of cul-de-sacs. His hands started to sweat.
Nice, she said, pointing to various faux southern plantation manses with pillars and porches.
La Gloriosa seemed to think Little Angel had meant to give her a pleasant sightseeing drive. Real estate hunting in America's finest city.
Mira, me gusta.
He grimly craned his head to search down side streets for any path out.
I like, she said.
Ooh, she pointed. Our big carro in that driveway, see?
Sure.
He was distracted, thinking about Big Angel, the little notebook in his pocket representing the Big Angel universe. Lines connecting names, it was getting too complicated to read. This woman beside him, Perla, Minnie, Lalo, the satanic Hispanic, Pazuzu, but mostly his big brother. How suddenly, on the verge of losing him, he realized he had no true idea who Big Angel was. But Gloriosa's scent filled the car. He felt it like a caress. He spun like a lost moon.
Go there,
she pointed. Her long nail caught sun and imitated a hard candy. He followed it around the corner. The neighborhoods over here were named, and their names were etched into signs that feigned genteel charm. Some in anachronous old English typeface. The neighborhoods made no sense to him whatsoever. Marina Shores and Malibu Harbor and Pacific Landing, even though any possible glimpse of the ocean was 20 miles in the opposite direction. All that these McMansioners could see was rocky canyons and deracinated brown hills housing vast populations of rattlesnakes and poodle-gobbling coyotes, brown unto the white with heat horizon. A phony little dock with a plaster seagull standing in some kind of dry, blue-tinged concrete pool was very close to being the last absurdity Little Angel was willing to abide. Where in the hell are we? He said.
The beaches,
he snorted.
It's beautiful, she said.
You have a positive outlook, he said.
Only selfish people are negative, Angel.
His head was throbbing. He was suddenly sure he had brain cancer. Fortunately, the mushy ride of the Crown Vic gently bore them over all bumps as if they were in a tender cradle. The car, seeming as intelligent as the Batmobile, managed to find the main street again. Little Angel was basically hanging on to the wheel and hoping the car would drag him to safety.
I don't want to think about the funeral, she said.
No. La Gloriosa put her hand on his arm. Her palm was hot. He was clammy with embarrassment.
Qué sweet, she said. Thank you, Gabriel, for this nice ride.
My pleasure, he said, and glanced at her. She smiled. He took her hand in his and tootled down the road like somebody's grandpa. In Target, she became a teen. They seemed to be dancing. They laughed at everything. Giant human backsides and stretch pants delighted them. Old Mexican cowboys in overalls and straw hats. She insisted on looking at flimsy bras made of shiny gauze and greatly enjoyed his misery. "You can see through," she reported. "God in heaven," he sighed. They collected the two cakes. The white one had purple and blue icing flowers on it. "What a nightmare," La Gloriosa noted. It said, "Happy birthday, big angel." The chocolate one had yellow flowers on it. It said, "Carnal." "Buy candles," La Gloriosa said. "And presents," he said. They moseyed over to the toy section, and Little Angel bought Big Angel a giant action figure of Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy. "I am Groot," he said. "Yo soy Groot," she replied. She picked out a Who t-shirt. "This is funny," she said. "Big Angel hates rock and roll." "Los quienes?" Little Angel scored points by quipping. They got Lalo's snacks and booze and stopped at the cooler in front to collect Minnie's sushi. Little Angel spied an in-store Starbucks and bought himself a second cardboard briefcase of coffee, just in case. La Gloriosa had a grand skinny mocha latte iced, no whipped cream. He thought, $5 coffee? "Never in my life," he said, "did I ever expect to go shopping with you." "Are you happy?" "Yes." "Qué bueno." She grabbed big sunglasses off a rack and said, "Please?" "Anything." "Okay. These and the Ford. Nice and simple." A white woman stepped up to them and said warmly, "You'll be out of this country on your ass very soon," then stormed toward the dog food aisle. On the way back, Little Angel pulled over by the basketball courts. Bookie stood in the middle of the court bouncing a ball. Nobody seemed to be hassling him. A clatch of kids just stood around or leaned on their bikes, rolling back and forth. Somebody had a boombox. The Pee-wees apparently thought it was still the 80s. Little Angel waved at the shorties. "Ookie's all right," he said. A couple of kids tipped up their chins. One waved back. Ookie stood in the key and threw in basket after basket. He never missed. The kids lounged around watching him. He bounced the ball three times, blount, 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 then fired it in a high arc and it rocked through the hoop, clanging the chain net. A kid grabbed it and tossed it back to him, and he bounced it some more. "Did you know he could do that?" Little Angel said. La Gloriosa said that she didn't. "Excuse me," he said. He got out of the car and walked to the court. "Sup," he said, and bumped fists with a couple of the kids. Did the Raza slip-and-slide handshake with a couple of others. "How's your mom?" he asked one of the boys. "She's aight. You in high school now?" "Chale, I'm at Southwestern College." "No." "How's Seattle, profe?" "Good." "Good coffee, right?" "Right." "Do you know Pearl Jam?" "Not yet." Little Angel was looking over at Ookie, who was crying, snot on his lip. The boy shot again, sank another basket. "Blount, blount, blount, purple haze," he said. He bounced the ball, shot another basket. "All along the watchtower." "What happened to Ookie?" Little Angel said. "Eddie Figueroa caught him in his house," the kid said. Shrugs all around from the others. "Dude was stealing Legos again." They shook their heads, spat. "Smacked him up." "Ookie, you okay?" Little Angel called. "Little wing," Ookie said, blount, 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 basket. "Ookie." La Gloriosa stepped up beside Little Angel. "Ookie," she said, "hay fiesta." "Party," Ookie said, pausing in his shot barrage. "Big Angel's birthday," she said, "lots of cookies." "Okay," Ookie said. He shot a basket and let it bounce away. "Voodoo child," he said, and walked to the car and got in the back seat. La Gloriosa wiggled her eyebrows at Little Angel from behind her new cheap sunglasses. "How did you do that?" he said. "Women," she said, "we are very powerful." He watched her walk. noon.
Lalo yelled, "Minnie's eating cat food!"
She held a California roll in between her fingers and dipped it in soy sauce.
"It's called sushi," she informed him. "You're not sophisticated."
"Sushi, fuchi, puppet chow!"
Food was appearing all around them. People came through bearing aluminum tubs of grub. La Gloriosa and Lupita and Minnie and Perla had arranged for platoons of barrio ladies and their husbands to appear with party supplies. Little Angel was thwarted in his hopeless search for homemade Mexican food. In his mind, chicken mole and pots of simmering frijoles and chiles rellenos were to be displayed in pornographic lushness. But the reality of the day was folding tables groaning with pizzas, Chinese food, hot dogs, potato salad, and a huge industrial party pan of spaghetti. Somebody was allegedly on the way with 100 pieces of KFC. He noted Uncle Jimbo at his table with a paper plate heaped with noodles and buffalo wings. Somehow he had acquired bottles of mead. Jimbo raised his bottle at him and hollered, "Skull!" Little Angel went over to where Perla was sitting. She had been watching all the people coming and going, feeling weepy about Braulio, but mostly fretting about her big warrior, her Indio. Time was almost gone. She had been sneaking out to Indio for years, and she didn't know if Big Angel knew it or not. She wouldn't put it past him. He knew everything, that flaco, but he never said anything. It was killing her. Each of those proud cabrones refusing to apologize for whatever they were mad about. Each one waiting for some sign. And Mama in the middle, frantic. All she wanted was to see what was left of her family come together before, well, before.
"Berna," Little Angel said.
"Me baby," she said.
"Are you okay?"
"I okay."
She squinted at him and said in Spanish, "You look just like your father. He was so elegant. He always brought me flowers, La Gloriosa, too."
"He brought her flowers?"
"Pues, sure. Everybody loves her."
"Me baby. You should marry her."
He coughed. "Perla. Course adjustment, stat. Where's the Mexican food?"
"What Mexican food?"
"Exactly. I was hoping you'd make something special." He gave her his best grin. "You're the best cook in the world, after all." She stared up at him.
"Yo no," she said, shaking her head. "No more cook."
She waved her hands in front of herself. In Spanish, she said, "I was cook for everybody for 50 years. I had to. Now I won't have to cook for anybody ever again. Oh no, Gabriel. I am a refugee from the apron." It had never occurred to Little Angel that cooking masterpieces every day had been a chore.
"Get me coffee," she said. "See?"
Off he went.
"I ate hamburgers now," Perla called. "Subway, Cheerios."
He waved over his shoulder. Jimbo swilled his mead and announced, "Hammer of the gods." Little Angel thought it was all turning into an end of semester project for his multicultural studies course. 12:30 p.m. It was as if a dump truck had spilled a ton of humanity into the yard. Bodies were jammed onto the patio, elbowing gently to get at the new macaroni salad and ignoring the mustard coleslaw. Little Angel shoved his way out of the crowd to find more crowd milling about. Big Angel was snoozing in the shade, hands folded over his tiny pot belly, his head bobbing slightly. Minnie sat beside him, fanning him with a bit of cardboard. She looked very sad. A DJ had set up his rig in the backyard and fired up some POD. Big Angel opened his eyes and glared. He made the family monkey face of disapproval. He grabbed the auga horn Lalo had screwed to his armrest and squeezed the bulb for one brash honk. Then he went back to sleep. Marilu caused several waves of alarm when she strolled in on the arm of Leo, her former husband. "We brought mimosas," she said. They were dressed to kill. Muddy Lou had on a navy blue dress with white dots and a pearl necklace. Leo wore a brown Tijuana suit with light yellow stripes, a cream shirt, a yellow tie with a tie tack in the shape of a dollar sign, a gray fedora, and two-tone brown and cream brogans. He had shaved his stash down to a slender worm of insinuation that seemed to nap on his upper lip. "Muchacho," he said, giving Little Angel a wan, dead fish handshake, while the moochy lip worm squirmed to life on the crest of his smile. Visions of half-inch-long acorns came unbidden into Little Angel's mind. "Leo el León," he enthused, "you are a mighty oak of a man." Marilu gave him a warning glare. Leo went off to the kitchen to mix drinks.
"Got to go inside, mija," Big Angel said. "Got to go now."
"Okay, Daddy." "I'll take him," Little Angel said. Big Angel put up his hand. "Brother," he said, "pee-pee time. You want to see my pee-pee?"
"I do not."
"Me neither," said Minnie.
"It's your job, mija."
She muscled the chair around. "What do I get for it?" she said. He smiled slightly, but never opened his eyes. "You get all the money," he said.
"Ooh, is there a lot?"
"Sure, mija, $50, $60. Little Angel and Perla watched them roll inside.
"Ay, Diosito lindo," Perla said.
Little Angel found a dapper Caucasian in khaki dockers and a crisp denim work shirt, helping himself to a cup of his cardboard box of Colombian blonde roast.
"That's my coffee," Little Angel thought.
But there wasn't any time to ponder it. A wave of Mexicans swept the kitchen clean, carrying its inhabitants out into the drizzle that had begun to sift upon the DJ-spinning Nortec Collective Tijuana Mariachi Techno. "Tijuana makes me happy," the song repeated. Kids and Marilu danced on the damp grass with leftover funeral umbrellas and newspapers over their heads. Paz stood before the spaghetti and KFC mounds with a look of utter disdain. She wore a platinum blonde wig cut in an Audrey Hepburn bob.
"Jesus Christ," she said to him, scowling. "Food for peasants, Jimbo food. We have better food in Mexico City."
She looked Little Angel up and down. "Food for gordos." You could tell she hated fat people by the way she poured disgust into every trilled R in the word. "Gordos." She looked over at Perla.
"Oye tú, ¿no hay cauliflor?"
she demanded in Spanish.
"Cauliflor."
"Carrots?"
"Celery?"
She tapped her toe in irritation. The DJ suddenly unleashed a mashup of Bootylicious and Smells Like Teen Spirit. He said into his mic, "Smells like teen booty."
"¿Qué es eso?"
I said. She dismissed the entire food table.
"Nada bueno."
"Nothing.
I thought so,"
she told Little Angel. He sat with her at one of the tables, dangerously proximate to Tio Jimbo's encampment.
"Dirty viejo," she muttered.
Jimbo had his arm around the neck of Rodney, the African-American college cousin.
"Kind of name is Rodney for a black guy? You named after Rodney King?"
Jimbo was asking. Rodney rolled his eyes at Little Angel and withstood this storm of whiteness. Little Angel remembered why he didn't come to family gatherings. Paz was wearing only about 6 or 7 pounds of gold and jewels. She caught Little Angel eyeing her tennis bracelets. She shook her wrist in his face. "You like?" Having rejected the eats, she sipped an unsweetened glass of sun tea. Little Angel observed the coffee thief in his impeccable work shirt looming over Tio Jimbo saying, "Are you some kind of fascist?" He watched his family dance and wished he hadn't come. Marilu was breathing heavily when she sat with them. She took the seat on the other side of Little Angel as far as she could get from Pazuzu. Her face was glistening with sweat.
"You are sitting together," she panted, carefully ignoring Paz.
"Qué nice," Paz condescended. "You got some exercise."
I could get lipo like you, Marilu said. How do you like the Botox?
I like it more than I like a saggy face, cabrona.
They stared at the dancers as if this vista were utterly compelling.
You got Botox, Little Angel said.
Don't be an ass.
It cost her $50 in Tijuana, Marilu told him.
You should try it,
Paz shot back. You could almost afford it. Maybe Leo can give you some money.
He still does, doesn't he?
They breathed heavily. Little Angel sat between them like a steer trapped in a branding pen, just waiting for the burning to be over. Finally, Paz said,
Oh, you poor border peasants feeling sorry for yourselves.
We are fine, thank you, Marilu said,
eating welfare food.
Little Angel was reduced to looking across to Tio Jimbo for help, but Jimbo was busy flipping the bird, the Anglo-coffee imperialist.
Paz took a sip of her tea. It's embarrassing, she said.
Come on, Little Angel finally said. Lighten up.
Paz stared at him.
Really?
She said. Her head hadn't started rotating yet, so he felt he had a minute or two to make his point.
You live where? She said. Alaska?
Seattle.
Oi, oi, oi! You really are a white boy. Everything you ever wanted. How long since you went to Tijuana?
To his silence, she replied, I thought so.
She drained her tea.
It is too much to hope you ever went to Mexico City. Jesus, Marilu said, otra vez con Mexico City.
You and your mommy gringos. It was almost as bad as gordos.
Little Angel saw that his brother had returned and took the coward's way out and escaped. He hurried over to Big Angel, put his hand on his shoulder, and said, Carnal, who's that guy fighting with Tio Jimbo?
Big Angel said, That's Dave. He always fights with Jimbo. It's a family tradition.
They like it.
Oh, said Little Angel.
The satanic Hispanic had stolen some hairspray from Perla's bathroom and relifted his coif to his preferred stellar heights. He sat with Pato, who was working on his fourth platter of party grub. His face was purple, and his cheeks distended, and he crammed some more Wonder Bread with butter in there.
Oomph, Pato said, chewing lustily. Oomph.
Right on, Dad, he said. He was scanning the crowd, then did a double take. Who was that?
He turned to watch her. Damn. Check out that chick, he said.
Cesar was always ready to A, eat, and B, check out that chick.
He craned around. Grabbin! He quacked through his food. Right?
Marco jumped up and waved Lalo over.
You better check your hair, puppet,
Lalo said.
Who's that chick? Marco asked.
What chick? Million chicks here, dog.
Marco pointed with his chin and his lips. Lalo scoped her. She was pale and slender and had a long neck and absolutely pitch-black shades and a black kangol turned backwards to make a beret. She was smoking an electric cigarette.
She's like French or something, Lalo said.
How you know that?
Beret, homie.
They nodded knowingly.
Dude, I'm in love. She ain't my cousin or nothing.
Lalo shrugged. Ain't everybody here your cuz? But I don't recognize her, so she can't be no first cousin. She's a kissing cousin, probably. Second cousin, like. You could marry her. Swoop on her. I will if you don't.
Marco unleashed the cookie monster.
She shall be mine!
Lalo said, You sound like a chud, and walked away. Lalo strode to Little Angel across the yard, slung an arm around his shoulder, and said, Yo, tío, want you to meet somebody. He reached out and grabbed a short young woman standing with a group of kids nearby. Her hair was purple in the back.
Tío, he said, This is my girl.
You're...
My daughter, G.
Oh, Little Angel put out his hand. How do you do, he said. How do you do, she said back. My name is Mayra. She shook his hand.
That's your tío, Little Angel.
But of course...
Myra's ladylike, Lalo boasted. She's gonna be, like, famous author and shit.
Ojalá, she said. She's gonna be a big deal in this world, Tio. No thanks to me. She headed over to hug Big Angel in his chair. Hey, Lalo called. Don't be no teen mom. I'm almost 20, she called back. Lalo put his hand over his eyes. Only good thing I ever done. At least I done one thing right. Little Angel looked away to allow him his moment. He gave his nephew a one-armed hug. A new car? I never had one. Good music, not rock and roll. Spanish. How could I forget? Banana slices and fideo soup. Lots of lime juice. La mini. Mi familia. The mist had burned off, though clouds still furrowed their portentous brows. Big Angel sat in the shade, receiving gifts and benedictions and hugs and hand kisses. He heard a demon roar behind him and twisted around, but all he saw was his nephew Marco. They waved at each other. Little Angel came and sat at his brother's side. He watched people take a knee before Big Angel's wheelchair and murmur gratitude. Guys with jobs thanked him. Women getting their GEDs. Young couples. A grizzled veterano came forward and removed his pork pie hat. When I got out of Folsom, he said, you took me in and fed me. Nobody else even wanted to see my face. Now I'm doing good, so thank you.
Claro.
Big Angel turned to Little Angel and said, carnal, rocks remember when they were mountains. They stared at the rocks in the garden. And what do mountains remember when they were ocean floors? Big Angel, Zen Master. A woman stood before Big Angel's chair, held one of his hands in both of hers, and reminded him that he had paid bail for her son one year, and now that son was a manager at a Red Lobster. Carnal, Little Angel said, this is like the Godfather. Big Angel smiled and laid a hand on Little Angel's knee. You're like Don Corleone, Little Angel said. I am Don Corleone. And he gave his hand over to be fondled and kissed by strangers. Then Jimbo stepped up. As if sent as a rebuke, he handed Big Angel a foot-long cigar. Try that, he said. No, Perla called. Yim, cancer. Why not, said Tio Jimbo, his mead buzz lifting him to Asgardian realms. What can it hurt? Celebrate freaking gay marriage. You're all libs, right? You're gonna die anyway. Live it up. Big Angel hated boorish behavior. By golly, he said, turning his face away. Suddenly Dave, the coffee burglar, swept in and spun Big Angel's chair away from Jimbo, saying, you're so rude, my friend. You have learned no social graces at all from your Latino family. He wheeled Big Angel toward the pizza boxes. All the pizzas were gone. You got no idea what I learned, said Jimbo. You don't know one thing. He extended the cigar to Little Angel. You want it? He said. Little Angel just stared at it. People scattered when Pazuzu came into the yard from the kitchen. They could see the tequila buzz upon her like some electric halo of doom. Get out of my way, she said, and they did. She had changed into party clothes. Her dress was a skin-tight orange one-piece, apparently made of t-shirt material. She wore knee-high boots. She was working her backside like a Roomba dancer as she marched. Like two potatoes stuffed in a sock, Marilu said. Paz stopped on the concrete apron of the porch and stared at them all. Her eyes looked bloodshot. The Little Angel was fully willing to own the fact that he was attaching occult terror to her presence. She turned those eyes on him and raised her lip in distaste. Leo could be seen absconding behind the backyard shed. Coward. She mouthed, ¿y tú qué? At Little Angel. Nada, he said back. Maybe she wouldn't kick his ankles. Paz strode to poor Pato's table and sat beside him.
Little Angel watched his brother's lips say, "Mi amor." She sank her nails into his left thigh. They tongued. "Ew," Marilu opined. Lalo was sitting beside his dad when Little Angel went back to check on him. "Pops," a voice behind them said. "Yes," said Big Angel. "Yeah," said Lalo. They all turned around. It was Lalo's son, Giovanni. Little Angel couldn't believe it. The boy had been a mere pup the last time he saw him. He had to be, what, 23 now? He was physically small, dark, and ferocious, with tats on his arms and neck, and a flat-brim baseball cap set at a quarter angle on his head. Dodgers. Los Dodgers. Gold chains. Gold gauges in his ears. A gold grill spelling playa on his front teeth. Gio had two dirty blonde white girls in tow. They looked alike, though one looked like a better-fed version of the other. They wore identical, impossibly small cutoffs, white or denim faded almost white and very thin. Shaggy stray fibers peeked out from the shadows beneath their buttocks. One of them had a stain on what there was of her back pocket. They were already bopping and bouncing to the music, holding their hands up and mouthing lyrics like the Supremes. Gio high-fived Lalo. "I saw the dude about the thing," he said. "And the thing be all, you know," Lalo said. "It's tight, yeah." "I don't need this, son, and you barely even knew your uncle." "I got you. But, Pops, I've been on this shit forever. I wasn't gonna let it go. Now we gotta go deal with..." Gio patted his side. He lifted his shirt and flashed the grip of Lalo's own .22 poking out of his waistband. "You been in my stuff?" Lalo said. "Call of Duty, old man." Little Angel didn't understand this conversation, but knew it was nothing good. When the pistol appeared as if in a magic trick, he felt ice down his spine. Then it was gone so fast he wasn't sure he'd seen anything. They got all shady and surreptitious all of a sudden, heads down, hiding shadowy eyes. "You good?" Gio said. Lalo was shaking his head. "Got to do what you got to do, Pops." They walked away in a top-secret confab. Little Angel watched them. "Not this again," he said in silent prayer. Minnie sidled up to him. "Crazy family, huh, Theo?" "Not used to it," he said. Little Angel decided to say nothing about what he had just seen. Gio came back, leaned down to Big Angel, and gave him a cautious hug about the shoulders. "Mad props, Grandpa," he said.
"Gracias, mijo."
Gio set a small wrapped object on the stack of small wrapped objects piled up beside Big Angel.
"Brought you something. Happy birthday."
Behind him, Lalo was bouncing on the balls of his feet.
"What you staring at, mouse?"
"You high?"
"Ain't shit. Check yourself, puppet."
"Hungry man," she warned.
"You don't know nothing," he said. "I don't got no problem. How many times I told you?"
He was suddenly all sweaty.
"You try this leg out. See how you like it."
This silenced her.
"Gio, let's get gone," he said. "Leave the hose."
He tipped his head dismissively at the white girls. Minnie wadded up a napkin and bounced it off Lalo's head.
"So rude," she said to his receding back.
Then she turned back to Little Angel. "Say hi to these trailer park girls." The girls offered blankly pleasant expressions.
"Talk about rude," Little Angel said.
"Oh," Minnie replied, "I'm rude?
Girls, where y'all live at?"
"We live at the Twin Oaks Trailer Park, over to Imperial Beach," the chubby one said, "with all the Mexicans."
"I ain't rude," Minnie said, walking away.
Before he could apologize to Minnie, the chubby white girl said,
"My name's Velvet, rhymes with Corvette. My sister's name, Neela, don't rhyme with nothing."
She made everything a question, like poets do when they decant in poet voice.
"They call me Keychain," Neela said.
"That's interesting," Little Angel replied.
"On account of my teeth's crooked, and they say I could open a beer bottle with my mouth, like a can opener." Little Angel stood there for a moment. He felt inexplicable love for these two waifs. Little Angel's notebook was getting full. He drew a lalo page, a sad drooping flower. On one side, a swirling bunch of dark bats, Geo. On the other side, on a facing page, one small hummingbird, Maida. He felt overwhelming sorrow. His tenderness enveloped all the many pages of lines and scribbles. 2 p.m. Now that it was afternoon, the sun broke through the clouds in dazzling avalanches of light. The satanic Hispanic watched the French girl and felt nervous. He couldn't think of an opening comment, an icebreaker, some suave shit to dazzle her. Damn it. He started toward her a couple of times, but wussed out and rambled back to Pato and Pazuzu. He was pretty sure she was watching him back, though her dark glasses didn't turn his way or anything, but for sure her eyes did. He thought she half-smiled one time. Pato sent a message to Manila on his phone. Do you have any pictures that show your legs? Marco sat by his dad and smacked his head with his palm. Loser. Why was it always like this? The DJ was back. He was playing some whack Oompa Oompa Tuba Sinaloa narco music. People were dancing some Mexican thing that looked like galloping horses. He hated this Chapo bullshit, and he hated their dancing. He'd never been to a prom. Dude, he'd formed Satanic Hispanic so the chicks would talk to him, but only guys ever came to see them. Boys in black misfits tees, throwing up devil signs and banging their heads and moshing. Bloody noses, but no tasty ladies. Now this, the world's foxiest fox sitting right there. Bored, scoping him out. He rubbed his hands on his black jeans, sweaty palms. Great. He got himself up and maneuvered through the army of cousins in his way and stood before her and grinned. She stared straight ahead and took a steam hit, blue vapors in his direction. Hi, he said. She paused, smiled vaguely. Hi. I'm Marco, he shouted, holding out his hand. She didn't look at it. Hello, Carlo, she said. Marco! Yes. She was utterly unnerving. Are you French? He blurted. Why, do I look French? He sputtered and made slightly motorboaty sounds. Yeah, no, maybe, I don't know. And you, Carlo, are you French? Marco, he said. Do I look French? Scored a point there, he decided. I don't know. You don't know? No, she said. I don't know if you look French. What, haven't you seen French guys? No, Carlo, I have not. I'm blind. He hurried away. 2:01 p.m. Little Angel tried to go into the house and check on his brother, but Berla stopped him. Shh, he's sleeping. He went back outside, and as unbelievable as it seemed, the party swirled even without the presence of Big Angel. Little Angel stopped by Uncle Jimbo's table to give back the cigar Jimbo'd foisted on him. He didn't have much time to visit, however. Paz came up behind him and pulled the back of his shirt until he staggered. Where's Leo? She said, I am looking for Leo. Little Angel extracted himself from her grasp and hurried away. Lupita watched her beloved Jimbo from the kitchen. El tío Jimbo. Everybody loved him. Era muy popular. That great buffalo of a man. He had saved her from Tijuana. Not that anyone needed to be saved from Tijuana. Viva Tijuana! She loved Tijuana! She told herself to stop thinking like a gringa. He had saved her from poverty. Though poverty in Tijuana, well, that was its own version of suffering. She laid into a pile of coffee cups with a scrubber. Yes, what you hate is poverty. That's what you hate. She remembered working in Perla's little restaurant. Big Angel, that angel, helped them secure the loan to open it. The sisters made all the food and washed the dishes, and La Gloriosa waited tables because she was so sexy. The men who came in for good food also came in for good flirting and left her big tips, which the sisters shared. Restaurant? Closet. Lupita banged the cups vigorously in a steaming pond of soapy water. Why, it had been so tiny, they could fit only four tables in there and a counter where the cooking was done. It had a room up rickety wooden stairs somebody had made with a saw and some nails. Home, Lupita thought. Cardboard boxes for clothes? Two mattresses on the floor. They shared a foul toilet shower with some prostitutes across the way. They had to remember to take the toilet paper out of the room when they bathed because the shower head was above the toilet. Still, the putas were funny and shared their makeup and hair rollers. Most of the sisters' money went into the restaurant. La Flor de Uruapan. No money for lipisticky or fancy hairdos or nice clothes. When they needed to buy something nice, they bought something for La Glory, pues. It was an investment in their future, they thought. She was their greatest product. It was easy to take most of the leftover food for themselves and deny her. She needed to keep her figure. It was for their survival as a family, they told her, that she stay slim. She was forever grateful to Jimbo for so many things. He had been there when Braulio and Guillermo were shot, and he had stood like a post of iron through the funerals. Poor Gloriosa. They all thought she'd die. Perla, she broke. Lupita had been at her house almost every day to try to help Big Angel keep Flaca together. Perhaps she had failed, because her Jimbo had cracked and she hadn't noticed till it was too late. None of them knew what it all had cost him. Lupita watched Jimbo's head droop, snap up, droop farther, then rise slowly as he smiled at everyone, borracho. It's okay, mi amor. You earned the right to be borracho. She ran her hands down her sides and belly. It was Jimbo who said to her when they were courting, Mexican women sure do love their kitchen. You ever see a thin old Mexican lady? You get nice and gorda, all you girls. So she'd gone to La Glory for advice. Once again, the baby sister saved her. By that point, La Gloriosa was an expert at dieting and maintaining the illusion that hooked men like catfish and reeled them into the pan. Lupita's lifelong struggle, sadly for her, her body believed it was a good thing to have round nalgas and a happy belly, and she was forced to fight against herself every day. Jimbo, well, he had lost his handsome sailor shape right away. Frankly, it was easier for her. The fatter he got, the thinner she felt. The fatter and drunker he got, the easier it was to get him to sleep. She often snuck out after he was snoring and went over to Perla's house to help her wash dishes, but mostly to have her late-night coffee with Big Angel. Ay, qué hombre. Everybody was in love with Big Angel. He was so broody, so dark, and had the little sideways smile that spoke volumes to any woman who saw it. What secrets did Perla know? Maybe she did not know how Big Angel heated the women. No disrespect to her elder sister, but she might not have the slightest idea what kind of man she had in her bed, while everybody knew exactly what Jimbo was. They could even imagine his sleep apnea mask. But poor Perla. Well, they all had their crosses to bear. Maybe Lupita was no glory, but she was all woman. Perla fretted too much about nothing. Silly worries and doubts and suspicions and jealousies. She must have known. Look at the way she wanted to kill on sight any other woman who came too close to him. But that smile of his. Ay, Perla always thought he was amused, and every other woman felt his gaze and was certain in her gut that he was aroused, as if the very sight of her, whoever she was, pleased him deeply, carnally, and he was forced to let her know this secretly, with regrets, for he didn't want to betray his own woman. But life was life, and one could not control the stirrings of the palo that hid under the edge of the table. Oh, hell, all of those brothers were alike. Big Angel slathered his passion all over Perla. It was a delight to see, really. Delightful, so much love. Cups clanked loudly. So much love. Honestly, she and La Gloria never quite understood what was so special about Perlita. Why her? She was old and tired even then. Their leader, their taskmaster. Big Angel was one of God's own challenges to them, a mystery they could not quite comprehend, a spiritual conundrum, a word she had learned on Jeopardy. She hadn't been able to get an education, but Big Angel had taught her to learn a new English word or concept every day from television. Perla came into the kitchen. Jimbo está borracho, she said. Sí, pobre. Pobrecito Jimbo. Perla went back outside. Really? Did she really need to report that Jimbo was drunk? As if Lupita didn't know that Jimbo was drunk. Jimbo was always drunk. He was drunk when they met, a young sailor asleep on the front step of their restaurant in Tijuana. He wasn't the first drunk American sailor they met, but he was the first who came back. That night they shoveled him inside and poured menudo into him. It was part of the deal. Jimbo drank, but he was blind to Perla, and even more astounding, blind to La Gloria. From the start, he was after Lupita. On his second visit, he brought her flowers, and from then on he brought little things that got more personal and intimate until they ended up in bed. Perfume, a bottle of rompope, lipstick, silk stockings. It didn't take all that long for the silk stockings to drop in a little tan puddle on the floor of a motel near Colonia Cacho. Lupita laughed. Ay, Jimbo. Of course she would marry him. Become an American just like that? U.S. Navy money? A gringo husband? Trinkets? An apartment with a bathtub? A new fridge? And a color TV? And a car? They had a Vista Cruiser station wagon in those days, and her boys, Tato and Pablo, were their bartenders and servers digging cold Mexican Pepsis and ham sandwiches out of the ice chest. It was as big as the restaurant. He taught her to drive in the Fedco parking lot, and then out in the desert, tooling around the Salton Sea. She had been so poor before Jimbo came that she had to steal napkins from the restaurant every month and fold them into pads for herself and her sisters. Oh, yes, Jimbo was her savior. He didn't need to know that when he mounted her, she was sometimes imagining Big Angel. But then, that day, Jimbo watched helpless as his nephew's life pumped out of his body on the sidewalk in front of his own store. And he really learned to drink. 3:14 p.m. Marco crept back to the blind girl with two knee-highs. One grape, one orange. Choice, right? That was good. Satanic Hispanic, he thought. Whose panic? My panic. I brought you a soda, he said. Thank you. She put out her hand, found the plastic cup, and held it. Grape okay? Grape. Slight sneer. He almost ran away again. You're shy, aren't you? She said. What? I mean, come on. I'm in a metal band. He choked down the urge to shriek, extreme. Probably. I guess. He gulped his knee high. Yeah, how'd you know? Her lips twisted into a reluctant smile. She had learned the greatest trick of the interrogator. Remain silent, and they confessed everything just to fill the chasm of silence. mystical blind people have psychic gifts to offset their disability. Didn't you know that?
No shit. Don't be silly, boy.
I get it. You're mocking me.
I can smell you blush, she whispered.
He stood there with a rictus on his face he hoped looked like a grin, but then realized it didn't matter. Had he brushed his teeth? He grabbed at a conversational life preserver that happened to drift across the open water of his mind.
Do you speak Spanish? He said.
Oh, no. Do you?
Spanish is for puss, he coughed. For people.
Other people or something.
Nah, not a lot.
She put her hand over her mouth and smiled again.
I sound stupid right now, he confessed.
Only right now? He was dancing around in her presence as if she'd been shooting her .45 into the dust at his feet.
All right, yes. I'm shy.
Know how I knew, honestly? Because you said hi, then you ran away. I scared you.
I think you did, he admitted.
You don't like blind people?
Jeez, no. I mean, no way. I don't even know any blind people.
If you were PC, she said, you'd call us differently abled in terms of vision. He looked over his shoulder. His dad was watching him, gave him the thumbs up. Then Pato made a fist and lifted his arm before himself and started pumping it back and forth, in and out like a piston. Paz ignored him and drained her cup.
Dude, he said. You're fucking with me right now.
With dreadful mock earnestness, she leaned forward and said, I simply adore your perceptiveness, and your sweet vocabulary skills are just the thing I've been yearning for all day.
He's a chud, Lalo said in passing.
She turned her head as if she could see him.
Can I sit? Marco said.
Why, Carlo?
Marco. I think I want to write a song about you, so I got to talk to you, even though you suck.
L-O-L, she intoned witheringly and turned her face in his direction. Her lips were parted. She flushed a little. Her hand brushed her cheek.
Really? A song?
He nodded. Duh, he thought. Blind, you dummy. But he didn't say anything.
Sit, she said.
3:30 p.m. Little Angel found himself in a dance circle with Minnie and the trailer park gals. Minnie was swaying dreamily like Stevie Nicks. Neela was humping and twerking away while aiming her fundament at various stunned males like a shotgun. Velvet relied on a running man slow-motion strut that had no form whatsoever, but was better than the white boy arrhythmic fish concert dancing of Little Angel.
Ookie?
Dance with himself, smiling at the sky, hugging his own ribs. Little Angel called, "The Ookster!" This made Ookie laugh. Little Angel had never seen Ookie laugh. Velvet spun Little Angel back around and did weird mask things with her fingers over her eyes as she ran in place, licking her lips at him while nodding encouragingly. La Gloriosa watched Little Angel dance. She didn't want to care. It was stupid. But why was he dancing with them? He never asked her to dance. She went into the abandoned living room and sat alone and told herself not to be ridiculous. He was a terrible dancer. 3:45 p.m. Everybody out here on the patio was happy, and he was dying. Right in front of them. True, Big Angel told himself. But this was what he wanted. Well, it was his party. He could cry if he wanted to.
Ha ha.
Sometimes, Big Angel said, I don't feel like I will die.
You won't, said Dave the coffee thief, holding yet another cup of Little Angel's Colombian.
But sometimes I know I will. Death is an illusion.
It feels real to me, Dave.
No whining.
Damn it, listen.
Sometimes, Big Angel said, I feel like I will die right this minute. Like today. I know I am dying today.
I'm going down a slide. I have only hours to live, and it feels goddamn real to me. Sorry, God.
Dave sat forward in his lawn chair, hands clutched between his knees. God,